when I was setting up the format for how I wanted to do this, I thought, well, you know what, I'm just going to do step five with six and seven, because five doesn't really, you know, require a whole lot of thought, really. But then, you know, I got out the big book, and I got out the 12 and 12, and I realized that there's a lot of meat in there, and it certainly, you know, the fifth step is equally important as all the other ones. And you know, one of the things that it talks about a lot in the big book is, who am I going to do this fifth step with? Well, you know, when the big book was written, there weren't a lot of sober people. Everybody was pretty much, you know, just a few years sober. And so, you know, they talked about doing a fifth step with a priest or, you know, or your doctor. And I don't know about you guys, but I can't imagine doing a fifth step with my doctor today. I just don't think that would go over well. Or you know, even your family. And, you know, and I've heard people say, well, you know, I don't think I need to get a sponsor because it doesn't talk about a sponsor in the big book. Well, that's because, you know, there weren't a lot of people to be sponsors, but they do talk about protégés. But in the 12 and 12, they talk about a sponsor, and they talk about, you know, that's probably the person that you should do the fifth step with, because they've been through this and they understand. And it's somebody that you need to trust. And, you know, I'm absolutely in full agreement with that. I know people that have done fifth steps with priests and ministers and, you know, whatever. But for me, you know, I needed to do that with my sponsor, because she was the person who knew me the best. And she was the person that I knew would call me on my bullshit, because, you know, I really wanted to, you know, like, be a victim in this whole fifth step thing. And so, you know, for me, doing it with a sponsor is the best way to go. And I know people who have done it with a priest, and then they've gone back and done it with their sponsors too. So, you know, for me, that's the most important thing. And it's really about being totally honest with somebody. And I didn't want to be totally honest with Beverly, because I just really wanted her to like me. And, you know, I just had all this garbage, and I knew that somewhere in there, you know, I'd done terrible things, and, you know, she was so, you know, loving and kind and happy and you know, sparkly and Beverly-ish that, you know, she couldn't possibly understand some of the things that I had done, and I just didn't want her to judge me. And that's not what happened. You know, what happened was she shared, you know, things that she had done in her past that were very similar to the things that I had done, so that I didn't feel alone anymore, so that I didn't feel separate, so that I didn't feel different or unique. And I needed that, because I just really felt so separate. You know, there's a lot of people on here right now that were here for a long time before I got here. And those people just scared the daylights out of me, because, you know, they just looked so happy and put together. And I just, you know, I was comparing, like they say, I was comparing their outsides with my insides, because I was a big blob of mess on the inside. And you know, those were the people, the ones that were happy, that were smiling. Those were the ones who said, you know what, it's going to be okay. It's just do this and it's going to be okay. And so, you know, I did this fifth step, and I didn't get the relief like it talks about in the big book, you know, where I felt it at perfect peace and ease with the world. That just wasn't my experience. I know that it is for a lot of people. It just wasn't mine. And I was sure that it was because I had done it wrong, or I hadn't done enough, or I hadn't gone far enough, or, you know, whatever I created in my mind. But after my first fifth step, I didn't do what the book suggests. And it's really clear about what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to go home, which implies that I went somewhere else to do my fifth step. So I go home, and I take down the big book, and I review the first five proposals, and I see if my foundation is solid. And, you know, then I immediately look at steps six and seven, and I didn't do that. I did such a great job with steps four and five that I rested, you know, and I rested until I got drunk. So I don't recommend that you do that. I recommend you follow the directions in the book as they're laid out. And so, you know, when I came back and I started over again, and I did these truly thorough inventory and said, all right, I'm going to do this exactly like the book says. That's when I started to get that sense of ease and comfort, you know, and peace that it talks about. And I've heard people say, well, you know, my sponsor and I, we went over my four step and then we burned it. And I don't recommend that because, you know, that's where your list is of people that you're going to need to make amends to down the road. And that's where your list of your character defects are. So I don't recommend that. I mean, if you want to break it out and make out list from that and then burn it for ceremonial purposes, you know, go ahead. I know people do it because they feel like they can't leave it around their house. And I understand that. I actually have one of the women that I sponsor. I have her four step in my car in my glove compartment. And it's locked up there. And she knows that if she wants to take a look at it again, that I have it and it's well protected. And so there's a lot of things that, you know, that you can do. But I don't personally recommend that you burn your fourth step. So I did this fifth step, the thorough, honest, really good one after I came back, and I did start to feel better. And I looked at steps 6 and 7, and you know, they don't look like very much in the big book because there's only 2 paragraphs. And so they don't look like they're very important, but the 12 and 12 says these are the steps that separate the men from the boys. And we can't blow by those. And I know people that just kind of go, okay, I read it, now let's go on to steps 8 and 9. There's a little more effort and prayer that is required of me in steps 6 and 7. And, you know, I wrote some stuff down today. I struggled with the word humility when I got here. I got it confused with humiliation. And I sure knew what that word meant because I placed myself in a lot of positions to be humiliated. And so I kind of was looking at that and I thought, why do I want to do that? Why do I want to be humiliated, you know, in front of this higher power that you want me to find? And so I learned that I didn't understand. I thought I was pretty smart when I got here, you know, and I found out that I didn't know the meaning of all of the words that I thought that I knew the meaning of. And so I got a big book dictionary and here there's a really, really good description of what humble is and what humility is. And humble is, you know, being aware of one's shortcomings, not showing or feeling superiority to others. And humility means being humble, the absence of self-pride, self-will, or self-assertion. And those to me didn't have anything to do with humiliation. So I looked at those and I thought, well, I don't know. Because it seems to me like then I have to turn into a doormat. And the big book talks about that. It says, you know, we don't crawl before anyone, you know. And so these steps 6 and 7, and I was, I don't know, I've got the book here, but I think I'm still in step 5 in the book. And you know, they're so small, these 2 steps. And so I just, I kind of, okay, fine. You know, I'm done with steps 6 and 7, and now let's move on. But here's what step 6 says. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something, we will not let go. We ask God to help us be willing. And that's a prayer right there. That's the 6th step prayer. And I thought that what this step meant was that God was going to just magically remove everything that was objectionable to me about myself, and I was then going to be perfect and get everything I thought I deserved in life. And that's really not even close. And what it says to me is the things that I have admitted to myself that are objectionable in myself that I'm willing to let go of. And there were things that I wasn't willing to let go of. There were parts of my personality that I really liked because they were really good shields that I could hide behind. Sarcasm was one of them. you know, deflection was another one. Judgmentalism was another one. You know, that whole superiority thing. I didn't think I was really ready to let go of those because they were still working. And I didn't know what would happen if I let go of those. What would come in there? What would replace those things? And so then we get to step seven, and it says, when ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And it's clear, but again, I didn't get it, you know. Remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. So the defects of character that I needed to be willing and ready to be have removed were the ones that were blocking me from sunlight of the Spirit, that were blocking me from better relationships with the people in my life. And I had a lot of fear about that. I don't know where I heard it, but some speaker, some lead somewhere, I heard that they talked about like cubby holes, and each one of these defects of character had its own little cubby hole in my brain. And if those cubby holes got emptied out, what would go in there? And, what I learned over time, over being beat into a state of reasonableness often enough to be willing to let go of some of these things, what is that? God filled them up with better things that I didn't know anything about, you know, compassion and honesty, because I was a liar and a thief and a cheat. And those, you know, the majority, I mean, the lying, cheating, and stealing mostly went away when I stopped drinking. But they were such a habit in my life, and they were so ingrained in my personality that I didn't know how I was even going to figure out what the truth was about anything. And so, I had to do a lot of work on that. I had to do a lot of, well, wait a minute, you know, what was the real situation here? What really happened? Because I have, you know, my own little perspective on things, and then there's the reality. And those two things weren't really close together. And it's funny because I was talking to my sister a while back, and she, I don't know what we were talking about, something about when we were kids. And what she said was so completely foreign to what I thought and what my impressions were. And I realized that, you know, her perception was a lot more accurate than mine, because she was coming from a different place than I was. I was coming from selfishness and self-centeredness, and she was not. And so, you know, Beverly would say to me, check your motives and pray about it. And I would just, I don't want to do that. I want it to be easier than that. I don't want to have to look at what my motives are. I just want to be able to do these things without having to think about it. Because it seemed like I was having to think about every single thing that I did and everything that I said. And it's kind of true in the beginning. You know, I had to really, because I didn't know how to be honest. I didn't know how not to be a jerk. You know, I didn't know how to be a decent person. I didn't know, I didn't know how to talk to guys without flirting and, you know, having, you know, assuming in my own little fantasy land that there was more to it than, you know, a friendship. Everything about me was just a complete disaster. And so those things, you know, I had to watch the women in the fellowship. They're the ones who taught me how to have friendships with men. And they're also the ones who taught me how to have friendships with women, because I didn't know how to do that. You know, they were competition always, and they just, you know, I couldn't trust them. And so, you know, a lot of my steps 6 and 7 actually came from watching other women. And, you know, Beverly dragged me all over the place all the time. She spoke a lot. And so we'd go to Jefferson, Ohio, and we'd go to Mercer, and we'd go to New York, and we'd go here, and we'd go there. And there were always other women in the car. And I, you know, as much as I like to talk now, I was a little intimidated, you know, talking around those women, because they were just so together and so happy and so smart and so whatever. And I wanted what they had. And so, you know, a lot of even learning what my defects of character were kind of came through osmosis when they would share, you know, their stories and things in their life and things about their relationships that they needed to work on. And, you know, I was writing a list down of things that I know. I mean, I'm still terribly judgmental. God forbid, don't get in a car in front of me because, you know, you're either going to go too fast or you're going to go too slow. And, you know, you just shouldn't be driving on the road, clearly. And there are other things that I'm still really judgmental about. But I know it, and you know, I pray about it, and I ask God to remove it. And I know that it gets better, but I also know that that's one of those upward spirals, that it's going to show its face again in some other way. That's the thing about my defects of character. They sneak right back in under different names. There's a lot of aliases for my defects of character. But the two that I wrote down that absolutely floored me when I realized I know that my God has a sense of humor, and so I'm probably going to regret that I say this out loud. But the two defects of character that I really do not experience anymore are jealousy and envy. And I was jealous of everybody and everything. You had things that I deserved, and you had the husband or the boyfriend or the car or the job or the house or whatever it is that I deserved. And I couldn't understand why you had it and I didn't. And envy, you know, those two are terrible. Those used to eat me alive. And you know, I don't know when they went away. I just know that those are not two of the things that I worry about anymore. I have come to the conclusion that when one of us succeeds, we all succeed. And that just comes from listening to Beverly and the other women in the fellowship who said, you know, we're all in this together. And, you know, so there's a whole lot of things that came into the place where those two were. And it's joy and it's compassion. You know, I'm joyful when one of my friends does well. It makes me happy. And I was never happy at anyone else's success. So for me, you know, these are the most important steps to really dig into, because, you know, what's going to happen here is it tells me, you know, what my real purpose is. My real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. So I have to clear away this garbage so that I can see them. Instead of looking at them through fear, I can see them through love. And I saw everybody through fear, and I don't. There are still some people that I do look at through fear, but it doesn't really have anything to do with them. It has everything to do with me and what my perception is. And so I'm grateful that there's always going to be an opportunity for me to grow, because I get bored, you know, if God doesn't throw stuff for me to work on. And boredom for an alcoholic, I think, is deadly. And so for me, you know, being able to look at these steps again, and of course, you know, when I go through the steps with the women that I sponsor, you know, I get to see this again. I get to learn more stuff about me again. And I, you know, it's one of my favorite things about sponsoring is that I get to, you know, we get to do this journey together. And to me, that is a huge gift. And I'm looking at Kevin's clock, and it looks like it says about 6:26. And so I think I'm done. Thanks.
Thank you.
I love seeing you guys clock.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. So at this point, we're going to open up the meeting to our question and answer period. Again, any comments in the form of questions are appreciated. So on Zoom, when you are on participants, and this might be different depending on the device that you're using, whether you're on a laptop or a tablet, but when you go to participants, there is a link to raise your hand. So if you click on that to raise your hand, we'll call on you and unmute you so you can ask Terry your question. So who wants to get us started?
Jerome's talking. I don't know what he's saying, but he's talking. You're muted, dude. Oh, he knows that.
Any hands yet, Kevin?
Okay, Jerome, you can unmute yourself if you want to talk, okay?
Oh, he doesn't really want to talk. Okay. Nobody? It's going to be a really short meeting tonight, huh? Hi, Dennis. Happy birthday.
Sorry about that. Hi, everyone. I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Helen.
Terry, thank you so much. I really, really got a lot out of what you had to say. But when you talked about taking your first fifth step and you did not feel that sense of relief the first time, but then you came back and you did another fifth step, did you feel that sense of relief that time?
I did. I don't think it was, you know, and again, this is probably just my perception. My perception was I was just going to feel, you know, perfectly at peace and ease. And it might say that in there. And I felt better. I felt like there was a weight lifted off my shoulders, like a lot of my baggage was gone. So I did. Probably not maybe to the extent that a lot of people do, because I know a lot of people say, oh my God, I felt so wonderful. I felt okay. I don't know that I'd say I felt wonderful, but I felt okay. He doesn't know how to unmute himself, I don't think. You guys have to unmute yourselves. Bob, unmute yourself.
There you go. I am Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Or Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Yeah, I just hopped in here. You know, for the fourth step, we create the list, our inventory. What's your take on burning it? Because don't you essentially need it for your fifth?
Absolutely, you do. I don't. You know, I don't advocate burning it because that's where the people are that you're going to need to make amends to. That's where your defects of character are. So absolutely, I don't think you should ever burn it. Maybe, you know, if you want to pick it apart and write those lists out on separate pieces of paper, you could throw it out. But to me, that seems like a lot of extra work and misery. So, no, I don't think we should burn them.
All right, Bob, did you have a question?
Yes. Yeah, hi, Terry. I just wanted to say that I've been to Glen Bay a few times and gone through all the steps and everything else. But in this, I don't have a question. Sorry, Greg. But I just wanted to tell Terry that's the best explanation of 6 and 7 that I've ever heard. So just want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Bob.
Looks
like Bob's good today.
Do we have any other hands?
Yeah, I'm Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Sorry, I stepped in. Terry, fabulous rendition as usual. My question is, I'm going to piggyback off of Helen for a second. She asked you about step 5. So my question is, when you did your step 5 and you didn't have that feel-good sensation, did you unload every single thing that you had, or did you hold back? Because when I did my step 5 with my sponsor, I just did the things that were right on the top of my mind that were really aggravating me at that moment. I didn't do it thoroughly like I should have. And I've had to go back several times and read step 5 with my sponsor. So did you get one?
I did. I told her everything that I had on my mind and in my head and in my heart at the time. And that doesn't mean, you know, I've heard people say, well, I did a 4-step once. Well, I don't know about you guys, but you know, stuff comes up. I've still got to take a look at stuff. And I know people say, well, I just do step 10, 11, and 12. And I get that, but sometimes I need to do the whole deal. I need to write it out on paper. You know, I need to look at whatever it is that's going on. And so, and the other thing is, you know, I do this thorough, and I did, it was very thorough. But then, you know, a couple weeks later, I'm like, well, crap, I forgot about this, or I forgot about that. And what Beverly said to me was, look, this doesn't mean you didn't do a thorough fifth step. If you don't have any you know, lingering deep, dark secrets, if there's not still a hole in your gut, you know, if there's still a hole in your gut, then there's probably more you need to share. But, you know, it wasn't about, you know, the next person that I heard. It was really about the patterns of my behavior. Now, I actually ended up adding some more people to my amends list, but I didn't, you know, my first real fourth step and fifth step were very thorough.
Thank you, babe.
We have another hand.
Whose hand? Ike?
Ike, is your hand up? And so you can unmute yourself. We hear you.
Hi, Ike.
I just wanted to ask you if you use the 12x12 to take somebody through the steps. I usually use the big book and the 12x12, especially on 6 and 7.
I do. I pretty much stick to the big book for 4 steps, 1 through 5, but there is a lot more detail in 6 and 7 in the 12 and 12 that I think really helps people understand it. You know, and the thing is, you know, that's the 12 and 12. I call it, you know, the big book 2, because it was written, you know, basically 10 years later. And so,
yep,
you know, they all had a lot more experience with how this stuff worked. And so I think the 12 and 12 is very valuable when it comes to, particularly for me, steps 6 and 7. So absolutely, I use that too when I'm working with women. Nice to see you, Ike.
Thank you. You have a nice one. Very good.
Thank you.
Do we have any other hands?
I got one for Jack and Deborah.
Okay.
You got to unmute yourselves, you guys.
You're going to have to unmute yourself, okay? Because I'm not that inept at it.
Okay. I got...
There you go. You did it.
Go ahead, Debbie.
I was just going to say, did you have a hard time with the first step?
Yes. Yes, I did. And I talked about that when we talked about the first step. You know, I talked about what a struggle it was for me, you know. I think a lot of us probably had a lot of problems with the first step. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome. Jack, are you up?
Yeah, I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to see all of you. I miss all your faces and miss the fellowship. Terry, thank you for sharing. I had a question. This might fall into sponsorship, but it does pertain to the fifth step. When you sit down with the lady you're sponsoring, and the lady is reluctant to start sharing from her past, do you find it helpful to share some things about yourself, you know, maybe to get the ball rolling, to you know, share one of those deep, dark things that, you know, might help them or prompt them to share?
Absolutely. You know, there's some stuff, you know, usually by the time I get to that point with a woman that I sponsor, you know, I know her pretty well. She doesn't even know that I know her that well, but, you know, we have so many shared experiences. So a lot of times I can say, you know what, this is what happened to me, or this is what I did, or this is how I felt when I did these things. And I shared something with one of the women that I sponsor a few months ago, and it's one of the things that I rarely share. It's one of those things that it's still painful for me to talk about. I don't have a resentment in connection with it. There's nothing I can do to change it. I don't know when to mend. But you know, some of those wounds don't necessarily always heal. But those are the things that Beverly says to me, you know, God will give you these things so that you can share them with other people. And so I shared this thing with one of the women that I sponsored a few months ago. And because they, if they're going to trust me, then they need to know that I trust them with my stuff too. And so I always try to, you know, open up myself to them too, because, you know, I can't have any secrets, and I can't have any secrets from the women that I sponsor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other hands?
Yeah, Jack here. Yeah, it says Megan, but I'm Jack.
Yes, you are.
Terry, thanks. Terrific job. Really liked your presentation. I have a question about, I guess it's step six. I remember being at a meeting and the speaker talked about it being an ongoing process. That is, it's not a one and done sort of a deal, that the step used the word entirely ready, and that for many of us, it's not a one-shot opportunity. And I just wondered what your thoughts are on that.
I absolutely agree. You know, I hear a lot of people say, oh my God, you know, I did another fourth and fifth step, and I still don't feel better. You know, I'm still not good. And a lot of times it's not about another fourth and fifth step, you know. It's about step six and seven. You know, am I entirely ready to have God remove whatever this is that's blocking me? And for me, that's a life. I think step six and seven are lifelong steps. You know, and I hear people say, well, you know, you go through it once, you don't need to do it again. That's not my experience. It's not my personal experience. It's not the experience of the people whose recovery that I respect, that I've listened to. I've been looking at some stuff now, you know, because this is as everybody else, you know, we're kind of, you know, quarantined, and you know, I'm probably better at it than a lot of other people are. But, you know, I got to look at, you know, I got to be careful not to allow myself to go into boredom and you know, decide to, you know, visit Amazon every day and, you know, rack up big debt on my credit cards. And so I have to look at that stuff before I do it. And this time I'm looking at it before I do it. And there's always going to be stuff that crops up. I you know, I'm never going to be perfect, and I realize that I don't even want to be, because you know, then like, who would want to talk to me, you know? So absolutely, I think six and seven, we got to do them over and over again. That's just my opinion. Thanks.
Any other questions?
Really short meeting tonight, huh?
You're not going to get out that early.
Oh, and it's thanks, guys. Now Kevin's going to ask me questions.
I know. I give him all a chance. I count all the way to three. That's as patient as I get. Okay, so what I'm going to ask you, Terry, is, you know, we covered five, six, and seven tonight. When you're sponsoring somebody, how do you, is there like a timetable? Do you do all three of those at the same time? Do you, you know, have assignments for step six, step seven? How do you approach that when you're sponsoring somebody?
Well, I follow what the big book says. For me, step six and seven, it's after step five, you know, we need to take a quiet hour. We need to go home and be quiet for an hour and go through the first five proposals. And that is a solitary activity. You know, that's between me and God. You know, am I good here? You know, have I talked about everything? Have I brought out everything I need to bring out? You know, am I certain that I'm an alcoholic and that my life is unmanageable and that, you know, all those other things in the first five steps? That's a solitary activity. And then, you know, six and seven are solitary as well. However, they're also one of those things that, you know, working with a sponsor with them, because, you know, I didn't understand a lot of what a defect of character was. Like, I just knew that I was a mess, and, like, everything, like, was jumbled together, and so for me to separate this out and say, oh, that's jealousy, or that's, you know, that's lust, or this is whatever those things are, you know, I had to have a sponsor, you know, identify those things for me sometimes. And so while 6 and 7 are certainly solitary in their prayer, I work with the woman that I sponsor and say, let's take a look at this and let's see, you know, where this is affecting your life, you know. And it might not be those specific words that I use, but that's, you know, that's what I'm getting to is, you know, what's going on here? What's blocking you from the sunlight of the spirit? Is it perfectionism? Is it, you know, I want to control everything? You know, is it whatever it is, you know, because there's a lot of nuances too. And so, you know, I need somebody else to kind of point that out to me sometimes too. Thank you.
I have a follow up on that. Sorry, you guys are too slow. Anyway, so what happens is, you know, when you do a fearless and thorough moral inventory, you deal with a person's character defects in 6 and 7, and then do you also, what do you do with the moral part of the 5th step when you talk about the assets they have? Because we're not all bad either. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's been my experience that there isn't anywhere in step 4 that tells me that I have any assets. And so moral means truth. It's not about morals. It's about the moral inventory means I need to look at the truth about myself. And the truth about myself was I didn't have any assets. Every character trait that I had, I abused. You know, if I was angry, I wasn't just a little bit angry. I was over the top rage. If I was happy, I wasn't just a little bit happy. I was obnoxiously over the top, ecstatically gleeful. There wasn't any balance in any of my character traits. And so for me, and also because if I had looked at that and said, well, you know, this is kind of an asset. Well, no, because I can fool myself. That's why we have sponsors. And that's why we do a 5th step with somebody else, because it says in here, solitary self-appraisal won't suffice. And I can say, well, you know, I talked to God about it, but, you know, that's still, I need somebody that's, you know, in my face going, well, you know, maybe that didn't really happen the way you think it did, or, you know, maybe you might want to amend here. So for me, at that point in time, I didn't have any assets. And so, and I, like I said, I know a lot of people say, well, make a list of your assets, but I can't find that in the big book. I've looked. So I just follow what the book says.
Okay.
Anyone else?
There's a lot of people on here. There's 40 people on here. That's awesome.
They're all shy. Maybe they can't relate to any defects. That's it.
That's probably it.
That's what it is. Everybody's perfect here. That's it. I love it.
That's okay.
Okay. Well, I guess that's it. Nobody else is raising their hand.
Dave Zern raised his hand. Hi, Dave.
I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, thanks, Dave.
One of the first questions I ask when we go into a 5th step with us, when I'm sponsoring somebody and they ask me to listen to their fifth step, is I do ask them, what is the best asset that you have? And the reason I do that is because they haven't been thinking about that. And sometimes that's the thing that they're going to build their whole life on. And perhaps what they're thinking is their best asset isn't their best asset. But at least it makes them think about what they're going to start building on, as opposed to what they're just going to try to get rid of. And I think that's important. And I don't know, maybe I disagree with you in that case, Terry, but that's just my opinion. And I find the most interesting answers when I ask that question is the first question.
Well, I'm going to write that down. Thanks, Dave. I guess
that wasn't the question, was it?
What is your best asset, Dave?
Tonight in silence.
Okay.
Anybody else?
You guys, you know, this is really... this is looking at all you guys and nobody's saying anything. It's really weird. I just have to tell you.
Hi, this is Dacha. I have a question. I raised my hand, but I think.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Dacha. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dacha.
It was. Great tonight, the lead. Thank you. My question is a little bit overall because I didn't complete all of my steps. I actually relapsed like you after 4. Is there any step for you just when you look at them? I know all of them are important, but like the most critical or, you know, when you don't do it right that you're more in kind of, you know, danger kind of situation. Or you see all of them have to be, you know, you go through them and then some of them you have to keep repeating as you get hit hard by certain things, life, trauma, and things like that.
It's funny because it's one of those things where it's the most important one to me is the one that I'm working on at the time. You know, the women that I sponsor now, we go through the big book and every chapter I say, this is my favorite chapter. And so every step is equally important. It just depends on where I am. You know, if I don't admit that, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life's unmanageable, I'm probably not going to be, you know, willing to let something restore me to sanity, and I'm not going to be willing to make a decision to take the rest of the steps. And if I do a 4-step and I don't do a 5th step, I'm walking around with all that stuff hanging out, and I'm probably, that's, to me, that's untreated alcoholism. You know, if I don't have alcohol to numb my pain and I don't have a God to heal it, that's a really horrible place to be. And I've been there a few times, and so I get it. Step 5, you know, you got to do that because you got to have somebody, you got to learn how to trust somebody, you know, and you got to learn how to trust yourself. And that for me is when I started to trust my own instincts was in step 5, because I couldn't trust my judgment. I couldn't even figure out what to wear, you know? And so step 5 was when I started to trust my own judgment a little bit, because I understood that I was not the only person that had experienced these things. And I had that, you know, I did these things and nobody else has ever done these. And so, you know, that's crap. You know, we're drunks. We've all done whatever we've done, you know, and if I haven't done it, there's somebody else who has, you know? And so, and then 6 and 7, if I just blow by those, then I'm going to stay miserable because I've identified these defects of character, but I'm not going to do anything with them. And so if I don't do 6 and 7, then I'm making amends, but I don't even know what I'm making amends for. And that's not helpful. That's harmful. You know, I've done that. I've made amends to people way before I was ready. And it ruins some relationships that I'm not going to be able to repair. And 10, 11, and 12, well, you know, that's where I'm at most of the time now. And that's the good stuff. That's like the icing. 10, 11, and 12 are the icing on the cake. So you know, you got to do the other stuff. You got to do all the other work before you can get to the icing. And, just do it. Just do it. Just do it.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Sure, I have another question. Sure.
Hey, you mute him, Greg.
I know. You, when you were talking, you said, well, if it isn't in the big book, that's what you don't do. Do you ever use any like other like outside readings for help for like 6 and 7, like maybe like Drop the Rock or any other outside readings that supplement the big book and help you get, you know, maybe, yeah, there you go. Or that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you bring those other materials to the game? In other words, when I know for myself, when I'm a better sponsor today, 30 years later, than I was when I was 2 years sober, 5 years sober, 10 years sober, because, yes, I did do the big book, but as I learned in my information and knowledge and wisdom grew just by staying sober a day at a time, do you bring that into the materials that you, when you sponsor?
Absolutely, I do. The reason I'm paying attention, but I couldn't figure on what was going on. I live in Harbor Creek, and there's a kid next door that's graduating or would have graduated this year. And there's like 15 cars in front of the house. They're all beeping horns, and they're waving black and orange pom-poms and stuff for the graduate. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Drop the Rock changed my life. I don't usually talk about it because it's not, quote, AA approved literature, but it literally changed my life. And I absolutely, we go through it, you know, the women that I sponsor and I go through it. I have one that we haven't done that yet, but I think we're going to start doing that via a Zoom meeting because I think it's really important. It opened up so much for me to be able to look at the nuances in my defects of character, and it's fabulous, an absolutely fabulous book. So yes, I use that a lot.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, we've made it to 6:54.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it is.
You did a good job.
All right, thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
So that wraps up our meeting for the evening. Just a few announcements before we conclude.